Blog Talk Radio.
Ilanga lishonile bafana masibuyisa komozoba.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. The air date of this episode here, Shabak's Black Experience in Hands, is April 12th, 2024. Okay, the subject that we're speaking on today, spread the word, spread the number. We want everybody to call up. We're going to be discussing O.J. Simpson. As we all know, I got word here from our Las Vegas, Nevada studio that Mr. Simpson passed away yesterday at the age of 76. Okay, and I want, you know, everybody to call in, you know, tell everybody, okay, is because the main thing that all I've been seeing about is this Canid case that they had down in Los Angeles in 1994 of him. I'm not talking about the situation that happened with him in Nevada. I'm talking about 1994 in June, okay, where Mr. Simpson was accused of killing this woman, Nicole, you know, who was his wife, that he had two children with. It happened in June of 1994. It was very, very hot. It was a bizarre case, okay. Johnny Cochran, you know, who is no longer with us, who was his lead lawyer on the case, had made the infamous line, if it does not fit, you must acquit. Okay, so it was a racially charged case, okay. Me, personally, I'm of the opinion that they did not have a case against Mr. Simpson, but however, him and his woman, Nicole, did have a history of some domestic situations. Okay, now, it's very, very interesting as that the lead attorney on the case, Mr. Johnny Cochran, may he rest in peace, had stated in his opening statement is that I have witnesses and I have evidence that's going to show that there were four individuals, you know, moving away from the murder scene. One of the individuals was being carried. Okay, repeat that once again. That he stated that he have witnesses, okay, that state that they saw four individuals leaving the murder scene at 875 Bundy Drive in West L.A. Okay. All right. So as the case goes against and progresses on, of these witnesses that Mr. Cochran was talking about, one was deported, one came up dead, and the other one came up missing. So you never heard no testimony from these witnesses right there, is because as we all know that the bodies were discovered with the puppy dog walking around wailing with blood on his paws, you know, through off of Bundy Drive in West L.A. Okay, so then it was very warm that summer. This is in June. It was very hot. I was living in Southern California. The story breaks, okay? You know, O.J. Simpson's wife dead and Ron Goldman. Okay. So then, from what I understand, I'm going by memory now, and if anybody can correct me or if I'm wrong, please call in at 516-418-5996. Okay. So then, what had happened was an investigation was made, okay, or was in the process of being made in the lap dogs. That's what I refer to the Los Angeles Police Department as. Okay, announced that they're going to arrest O.J. Simpson and that he was supposed to have a, may turn himself in by a certain time, what they would call the gentleman's turn-in or whatever, and whatever type of nonsense that was, because I don't know nobody who's had the opportunity to go turn himself into the Los Angeles Police Department on a murder one case. Usually, when it's murder one, you know, they send in SWAT, they kicking in your door, they killing everything around you. You see what I mean? You know, to get you just, you know, like how they do in South Central and what have you. Okay, so therefore, Mr. Simpson was taken into custody. He was released. A few days later, then you see this infamous car chase. And it wasn't no car chases because how were you going to be doing 45 miles an hour on a freeway and you got law enforcement agencies behind you and you're doing no more than 45? No strips were being thrown out. The helicopter was following them. The news cameras was following them. And then to mention the fact, you know, was that the people is on the side of the freeway, expressway, or what have you, talking about run OJ, go OJ, go Juice, go Juice, go Juice. Willie Williams, yes, the same Willie Williams, who was the police commissioner in Philadelphia that bombed the move house, you know, years earlier, was the chief of the Los Angeles Police Department. He comes on the news stating that Mr. Simpson was supposed to turn himself in at this time, okay, but however, he did not show up, and Mr. Simpson is a fugitive, okay. So then they pick OJ up at the address on Rockingham up there in Brentwood, okay? So then, which is a section of the city of Los Angeles, which is near UCLA. You're up in the Ritzy area, okay? So then he's taken into custody. He's taken down there what used to be at 150 North Los Angeles Street, which they used to refer to as the Glass House. It no longer stands there, but that was police headquarters, okay? So then they book Mr. Simpson. And then the very next day, on the newspapers, over the television, on the magazines, you see OJ's mugshot booked, Orenthal James Simpson, okay? And then what is he booked for? Okay, he's booked for two counts of 187A, 187A of the California Penal Code, which is murder in the first degree. Okay, so now here it all comes up. OJ is in jail and all that. Then you got brain dead Negroes down there in the press talking about, yeah, he did it. Yeah, you know, he's guilty, he's guilty, he's guilty. Blah, blah, blah. Okay, the man that had three knee operations, okay, he played in the NFL. You know, of course, Mr. Simpson had some character traits. He was very, very egotistical, okay, because I've known people that came across O.J. Simpson in Los Angeles and stated that he was very, very egotistical, and he didn't want to sign autographs or anything like that. And I think I saw him in person one time about 2 years earlier prior to the USC Rose Bowl game, because you do know that he played in the Rose Bowl in Pasadena, California with USC. I forgot who they played. But anyway, that's where he made a name for himself. He won numerous collegiate awards as well, too. He shattered a couple of NFL records, and I do recall that he was selected for an award where he had got the most yardage in a single season of 2,003 yards. Okay, O.J. Simpson, you know, was married to his first wife, Marguerite, you know, when he went into the pros from San Francisco, California, because Mr. Simpson was from the Petrel Hill District in San Francisco, California, and he played his high school football at Galileo High School before he went to USC. Okay. And then in the 70s, we know he played for the Buffalo Bills. Then he also played his final season with the San Francisco 49ers, you know, to go out to retire from his NFL career with his home team, you know, where he was born at, San Francisco. And then he was an announcer with CBS Sports, and then he was also an announcer on NBC. Okay, so then what had happened is, in the press, after Mr. Simpson is arrested, then they're stating, you know, that he was constantly beating on his woman and that OJ was egotistical and whatnot. Okay, so then his first initial lawyer was Robert Kardashian. Yeah, the father of them broads. Yeah.
Yep.
So then he had had to get help, okay, it's because the case is getting more complicated.
No, I have
okay,
echo.
So huh?
It's Lady Chase, she's talking to me on the StreamYard and she's saying I got echo.
Okay. Alrighty. So then what it happens, ladies and gentlemen, okay, now this is 1994. Now keep in mind, folks, that this is 2 years after Los Angeles had the worst riot in U.S. history in regard to the Rodney King case. Okay. So the trial starts. They got O.J. there, starting with Robert Kardashian. Then comes Ethel Bailey. Then comes Johnny Cochran. Then comes Barry Sheck, I believe, was the other attorney. And keep in mind, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going by memory. If I'm wrong, please correct me. Call us in at 516-418-5996. Now, considering the fact, ladies and gentlemen, that the LAPD has a tainted past when it comes to dealing with black people, okay, it's because, as we all know, that this is 2 years right after the Rodney King case. Okay. So then, as we know, they are playing the 911 tapes where Nicole Brown is calling in saying that O.J. Simpson is beating her up. They show photographs of Nicole Brown, you know, bloody and whatnot, you know, from O.J. Simpson. And I believe he was charged with domestic violence, spousal abuse under California law prior to his arrest in the murder. Okay. So then the case opens up. All right. So then the witnesses, against O.J., they're coming in, you know, Denise Brown, the Brown family, you know, all against O.J. But I found it very, very interesting of how much they had hated O.J., but yet, though, they wanted to take pictures with him in his NFL days. They wanted to take pictures with him, you know, for the tabloids down there in Los Angeles, California. You know, they was getting some of his money. All with their little sisters married to O.J. Simpson, Orenthal James Simpson. Okay, so then the case starts. They got evidence saying that O.J. Simpson, you know, was beating this woman, okay, or that he was convicted of spousal abuse against her. But yet, though, she's going back to him. Then there was a few incidences that they had where they called up the West L.A. division of the LAPD of where they reside, you know. Then they would go up there to Rockingham, talk to O.J. or what have you. Then O.J. had his buddies from the LAPD who would come by, visit with him, play golf with him, you know what I mean. One of these officers was one by the name of Ship, S-H-I-P-P. Okay, I forgot his first name, but he used to go over there to O.J.'s and kick it with O.J. and whatnot because, you know, he's the juice and this, that, there, the other. Okay, so then Fred Goldman and his wife were the parents of Ron Goldman, who was the murder victim of number two. Okay, he allegedly was going over to Nicole's place from the night spot to return her glasses to her, to return a pair of glasses to this woman, man, and it's like about 12 o'clock at night. You know what I mean? Yeah, very, very interesting. But we all know what goes down there in Los Angeles, particularly out there. Yes.
We have two callers, I believe. One of them is Sarge, and the other one is Dr. Truth Bay.
Oh, okay, all righty, okay, we thank them so very, very much for calling. Just press one. Okay, all righty, okay, we do believe one is the other one. Okay, and the 323 number, just simply press one when you're ready to come on in. Okay, greetings, unknown caller. I think I know who this is. Good morning to you. You got a lot to say.
Yeah, you know who it is, and I'm getting on you for accusing me falsely over and over again of being AWOL and deserting the town hall, and I'm here to throw that back in your face. I'm about to spit this truth on you, and you ain't gonna be able to handle it.
Okay, Sarge. Now, hold on. First place, we have a very, very special guest this morning, I believe, and she stated clearly that she does not want no profanity on today's podcast. Okay, so we're definitely going to give the doctor...
I'm not one to do... What am I known for that? I'm not known for that, am I? why would you come out the bat and come up to me with that? Man, I might say a lot of things that may be harsh, but I don't my command of the English language is such that I need no obscenity.
I see. Okay, 323, thank you for joining us. Thank you for joining us very, very much. The last three is 583. I see you calling out of Los Angeles. Good morning to you.
8583.
Good morning.
Okay, thank you so very, very much for joining us, Dr. Bay. And the rules is there's to be no profanity here, ma'am, you know, while we're here. But as I was continuing, Dr. Bay, as you know, please correct me if I'm wrong. We got Sarge, you know, calling from the other side of the world. Okay, I'm at the point, Dr. Bay, of where they arrested O.J. Simpson. And that they're starting the trial when O.J. had Johnny Cochran in there, Barry Sheck, Effley Bailey, Robert Kardashian. And Johnny Cochran is making his opening statement, ma'am, as you recall, where he had stated that he's going to produce evidence that there were witnesses that saw at least four people running from the murder scene where one of the individuals was being carried. Okay, am I correct on that there, Dr. Bay?
I'm sure you are. The details of that is not something that I'm too privy to. I just know that the Bronco was on the highway for a few hours, and it took everyone's attention.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Okay. But so, therefore, you know, the tainted history of the Los Angeles County District Attorney's Office, okay, as we all are aware of, okay, they got Marsha Clark and you got Christopher Darden right there, the one that was wearing the glasses and what have you. Okay. So witnesses are being called up. Cato Kalin about where O.J. was the night of the murder. Okay, that O.J. had returned to his residence up there on Rockingham, and then, Sarge, O.J. leaves LAX via limousine, and then he lands out there in your neck of the woods, Sarge, out there at O'Hare Airport in Cook County. I'm sorry, DuPage County. Okay. All righty. So, therefore, then they inform Mr. Simpson, you know, of his wife's passing. Okay. So, then he's brought back, or he comes back to Los Angeles County. Then he's interviewing with LAPD, you know, the most notorious police agency in the world. You know what I'm saying? The number one hater of black people worldwide. Okay. So, then... he's released, and then, you know, they go into the inquiries. He's arrested with trial. Now we're at the point where they are impaneling the jury. Okay. So now they're starting the trial. Mr. Simpson, you know, is in the L.A. County Jail. You know, he is not released on bail. I think Dr. Bay, didn't they put O.J. on a no-bail hold, ma'am, if you recall when they had him at Twin Towers?
Yeah.
Okay, yes, ma'am, okay. All right, so therefore the trial begins. Okay, okay, and I see we, okay, and I see we, yeah.
We got Lady Che in the building.
Okay, all righty, okay. All right, and so then what had happened is they had started the trial. You got the Dream Team defense and what have you. Okay, so now they're saying is that that, you know, they start in the case and then they producing all these 911 tapes from the West LA division of the LAPD of where of the domestic violence situation that's happening between Nicole Brown and O.J. Simpson. Okay. And then on top of that, next, which goes on is... over years, you got testimony that's coming back and forth, you know, in the case. All righty. And then, you know, witnesses are coming up one by one. Okay, Dr. Bay, do you care to elaborate, you know, on that for a minute, ma'am? You know, and we're at the preliminary part where they're getting ready to start bringing in the witnesses, Dr. Bay.
Yeah. Well, what I do know about Christopher Darden running for office nowadays, the OJ
Christopher
case, I'm not too trivial on the case itself.
Mm-hmm.
But I will, I can elaborate on it if someone else has an opinion on it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my opinion on the O.J. Simpson case, I just feel that, you know, even though he was guilty, that he was able to get over on them for years. They have tried, and he has never, I mean, a black man has never really been beaten in the judicial system, but this, I guess, was payback for all the years of racial discrimination at some of the states.
So, Dr.
And police abuse by the LAPD. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And then, of course, as Dr. Beige knows, is that Mr. Cochran, may he rest in power, he used to take a lot of cases pro bono for black people there in South Central and Southeast Los Angeles, you know, who were the victims of police brutality, okay, such as the Deadwiler case and such as the Eula Love case, okay? All right, and now, Sarge, I know you got a lot to say, okay? Come on with it, Sarge, and keep it clean. We have a...
We got something to say as well.
All right.
I got a lot to say. You just let me know when I can say it.
Okay.
Sarge, you've been charged with being AWOL, and, you know, you're never here.
See, she can't let it go, can't you? See, what did I tell you? What did I tell you when I called in? See, I feel like O.J. Simpson up in here.
Come on now.
Treat me like O.J.
I already nominated you for an award. Well, you know, I already nominated you for an award, so, you know.
I'm telling you, man, I'm being falsely accused.
Black Power, Dr. Truth Bate. Black Power, Dr. Truth Bate.
Yes,
and
ma'am.
Brother Shabaka. And Sarge,
yes,
glad you made it today. You know, you're not fired today, but some, you know, two days another day.
See? You
I
see how I'm being hectored
so,
here? This is like a Soviet show trial.
Oh, my
God. What are you going to do about it? Why? Jesus. Calm down. I don't know who has a heart condition, me or you. All right, let's check it out. Check it out. Everybody, I'm going to be real quick about this. I count this as a win for black people, or at least, you know, I count this as a win. John Cochran, he was winning. He did a good job. OJ is still, you know, it's terrible that even his death, you know, the Caucasians got to ask whether or not he's going to end or not. I find that to be very, 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 very bad form, uncivilized bad form. I think that, you know, he was acquitted. It was over with. You know what I mean? That was a long time ago. It's sad that that's all that people will talk about. We'll talk about anything else. That's all I have to say. I think that, you know, we should count this black people don't get a lot of court wins, you know. So, you know, that's what happened. He won that, you know. And Johnny Cochran did an excellent job. There's never been another good ass attorney like him since. So, it's positive. Go ahead. I'm done.
Okay. Now, may I speak now? Hello?
Floor is yours, sir.
Hello?
Yes, sir. The floor is yours.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate that at last. Okay, good. Now, Shivaga, I see that you are concentrating on and focusing on the legal elements of the case and the timeline and all that is entirely appropriate, and I do want to delve into that if we can do it. Because there's a lot to unpack.
By all means, Sarge. Now, keep in mind, Sarge,
yeah.
I was there. I was there in Los Angeles at this time, okay? You know, I didn't go visit the trial itself is because down there in front of the criminal courts building, the same place where they convicted Charles Manson and the Tate LaBianca places, it was a huge press circus. You had the press from all over the world there. And then in the second half of this show, we're going to get into with the Rodney King situation. situation that might have had an effect on this. Now, as Dr. Bay said, if OJ beat the system, he beat the system. Because, see, me personally, Sarge, I don't have no sympathy for the LAPD. I don't have no sympathy for the Los Angeles District Attorney's office. It's all the fabricated cases that they have put up against people that I knew and loved in my time. You see what
right,
I mean?
Hold your horses for a minute. Let me develop my thesis. Man, you got me 25 seconds into when I started talking.
Not using one cuss word. Today we are not using one cuss word. Today
I don't
we are
use
not
any
word.
Anyway.
That's
why are you abolishing me? I'm not the one that uses them.
It's me, Dr. Truthman. I cuss further than men. I apologize. I'm going to do my best, though.
I'm just saying it is not appropriate to it is not appropriate to admonish me because I am not the one who uses it to any extent.
Wait a minute.
Let me explain what I was about to say now. I was about to say was
okay, please
yes,
do.
You are quite appropriately focusing on the timeline. That is good. But I would like to introduce another element of this that I think that as significant and spectacular as the O.J. Simpson murder case was, something that is of even greater significance to the wider society, not only for the culture, but for American jurisprudence itself. And that is summed up in what a jurist said. And I want to refer you to the excellent 7-hour documentary by ESPN called O.J. Made in America. Now, I'm not crazy about ESPN, but I'm going to tell you something. ESPN did an outstanding job with this documentary, 7 hours, with footage almost I've never seen before, with people and who commented on it that I didn't know about, with facts revealed that is documented facts revealed, just fascinating. It is one of the finest documentaries I've ever seen on any subject like this ever, and I refer you to it. And here's what sums up the whole thing to me. It was really amazingly balanced, too. That's what gets me about it. It was amazingly balanced. But this is what sums up this whole case to me. They were interviewing one of the jurors. Her name was Beth, okay? And the juror was asked by the interviewer, was the O.J. Simpson case payback for what was wrongs done to black people in the United States? You know what Beth said? Uh-huh. And then the interviewer asked her, do you think that's right? And then at that question, she just held up her hands. They asked another juror in the interview, pretty much the same thing. And that interviewer at greater length said, yeah, didn't have anything to do with the law, didn't have anything to do with the facts of the case. We were getting payback for 200-some years of American injustice to black people. I'm going to tell you something. Let me tell you something about this O.J. thing and Rodney King and everything else. This is what made me a conservative. Not only gun control, when being a police officer, I found out the lies they've been telling me about gun control was simply not true. And before I was a police officer, I was for gun control. I was all for it. I said, confiscate them all. That's what I believe. But I found out the lies they were telling me. Then next, I saw the thing with Rodney King, where objective fact and truth didn't seem to matter anymore. And finally, what did it for me, what made me a conservative, was the beginning of the modern-day woke mind virus had its inception, finally, its final apogee, its apotheosis in the O.J. Simpson trial. And let me tell you what they did. What they did was they said that intersectionality and history matter more than objective fact, truth, and evidence. And what depends is your perspective and not the objective facts itself. And we've been living with that ever since. It's now come to a culmination with George Floyd, and it's only getting worse, and we better kick it back, or we're going to be ruined when it comes to rationality and the ability to linearly reason.
Sorry.
And I'm telling O.J. Simpson is the beginning of all of it.
To the murder of unarmed black people, man, and brutality.
See?
Okay,
see
the
what I mean?
Case
see what I mean?
Was a case of police
see
brutality.
What I mean?
Okay.
Yeah. You didn't pull my case.
O.J. Simpson was painted, okay, like
you
that.
You didn't pull my case.
Said, something not right, okay?
the case against OJ was tainted. Mike Furman was a racist, bigoted crash officer.
Narrate.
He was nothing more than a murderer. The lead investigator of the case, who states clearly, for
we
gave five niggas. We beat the
first one. You beat the second one. What's the weekend? The first one. You beat the third one. The fourth one is going to bag it up. Government of Common Police Tactics of Interrogation. When it comes to the murderers, Los Angeles Police Department. I yield. You're proving my case. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Okay,
Sarge, I was in Los Angeles. Were you?
No. I was
in
O'Hare International Airport.
Wait a minute. Found the knife. Oh, okay.
Yeah. I was in Chicago. And I followed this avidly, so I remember it just as much as you do, whether I was in Los Angeles or not. I was I wasn't around for Gettysburg either, but I know about Gettysburg.
Oh my God.
Okay. Sarge. This is what me and Dr. Bay have lived through in Los Angeles at that time. Were you in Los Angeles at that time, Dr. Bay?
Yes, I was in high school actually, and about a year after that I went to New York and finished my schooling. So I do remember 1994. It was a very centralized case. It was media focused. A lot of people. There was the first time a trial really brought the differences of the white and black constituents of Los Angeles. It was all around the world.
Exactly.
It was really.
Right, exactly. True. That is absolutely true. And that's what I want to explore.
Okay, what do
that
you want to explore, Sarge?
Well,
what
the fact that
explore,
what the doctor
Sarge?
What the doctor just said was the absolute truth. The difference in perspectives. It was almost like saying one party looks at something, dips their finger into a puddle of water and says, that water is wet. The other person dips your finger and then the same puddle of water says, no, it's dry. It literally was like that, literally night and day. The same set of facts, people had completely different outlooks on what it meant and what it should meant and what its significance was. That was the most fascinating aspect of this to me.
Yeah, there was a large age gap as well, you know, so... OJ met Nicole in a private Beverly Hills club. She was a waitress there at 18 years old, and I believe he was 30 at the time. And the thing is, he was married, but he divorced his wife 2 years later and married her. So it was a control thing from the beginning. And one of the things that when you're dealing with Caucasians and involving in marriage with them, you got to take all their spirits, all their craziness, all their, later on, I don't know how long she was using drugs, but apparently she was a cokehead majority of the time. Hey, if he liked it, he loved it. And so I didn't think that this relationship was equal to say the or respected afterwards. I mean, I believe there's a lot of sexual and activities happened during the marriage, infidelity. And I don't think it was a stable marriage, you know, but the two kids that they had, my heart goes out to them, you know, primarily Sydney. And to see or witness what have happened, I feel that, again, this was a necessary step to teach LAPD the racist tactic, because it was very, very heightened with the discrimination, and that is just a way to pay back.
Is it true that George Bush Sr. was investigating the LAPD at the same time before he left office?
I believe, Yeah, I don't think that helps out that much water because, again, they continued their behavior even to this day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, George Bush could have done something to make it seem like he was caring about the African-American community, but in actuality, as you see, there was really nothing that has changed.
Mm-hmm.
Always from the DA. So a step back from 94, it's, that was really when the height of their behavior came to fruition. But it's like the wolf, you know, you have the wolf guarding the hen house. What kind of results do you think the Bushes would have done by investigating a racist-ass police force that they are kin to?
No.
Think about that.
It was a nothing burger. I just wanted to know if it was true or not, because I had heard somebody on one of these platforms talking about it yesterday.
Garcetti. Now, here's the irony of that there, too, Brother Che. Now, Gil Garcetti was the district attorney at that time, okay? Gil Garcetti didn't stay less than a half a mile from O.J. Simpson in the same community up there in Brentwood, which is a section of the city of Los Angeles, and this is why the West Los Angeles Division of the LAPD, did the initial investigation. Okay, so now here you have Marsha Clark and Christopher Darden, sitting there, looking like Uncle Tim Scott, skinning and grinning in an opening aspect of the case. Okay. Now, I'm of the opinion they had great evidence against OJ for a spousal abuse case is because they did have a lot of domestic situations. There was even also to the 911 calls where Nicole Simpson were calling, he's beating me, he's beating me, he's beating me. So therefore, one thing that you have to understand, in the city of Los Angeles, when you have most racist, Gestapo-like police force like the Los Angeles Police Department, laced with white supremacy, and they seeing this white woman being a victim of this spousal abuse from this black man. Okay, so she very few times she filed charges against him, but she kept going back to him. And then as Dr. Bay was saying, that this woman had a dope fiend problem. So I put two and two together. Now, this is my opinion, and Dr. Bay and Sarge, feel free to correct me if I'm wrong. I'm going back from memory. My memory is not what it used to be because I'm in my 60s. When this case was going down, I was in my 30s. Okay.
Unknown caller, if you want to be live on the air, just press 1. We got an unknown caller. I don't know who it is, but if you want to be live on the air.
Okay, who knows? Probably a lapdog agent. You know what I'm saying? We'll bring them on in a moment. Okay. All right. So then, from what I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Bay, is that she was going into a lot of debt behind her usage of drugs. And I think that OJ had got tired of putting a bill for it. So I think the mobsters had came up there to collect. She didn't have the money, okay? So they put the work in on her. Ron Goldman, okay, his hands was battered real bad to a pulp. Off of certain knowledges that I have when it comes to combat, okay, this clearly shows that Mr. Goldman was in a fight for his life, defending himself, okay? This coincides with Johnny Cochran. We got a witnesses who's going to show four people coming from the murder scene. One of them is being carried. One of these witnesses was deported. One came up missing. Okay. And the other one, you didn't hear from. So what about that, Sarge? I can't hear you, Sarge. Come on with it, Sarge.
Well, you're not going to hear me. You don't let me keep talking over me. You're definitely not going to hear me. All right, look here, man.
Tell you what, I'm on mute.
That's not necessary. Just listen. Because, I get right to the point. I don't do a lot of narrating. I get the point. Look, what the case against O.J. Simpson, all the evidence against him was circumstantial. And that's what everybody kept saying. That's circumstantial evidence. The gloves, the blood in the Bronco, the DNA, I mean, the blood typing, the DNA matching, all that other stuff. That's all circumstantial evidence. It is. It's all circumstantial. The whole case is circumstantial. But that doesn't mean you can't get convicted on circumstantial evidence. There's only two types, really. Direct evidence, which is eyewitness testimony or confession or some sort of photographic record, filmic record, photographic record, or circumstantial evidence. People are convicted of circumstantial evidence all the time. Even if you exclude that evidence that was questionable and controversial, what remained that was uncontroverted was more than enough to convict him. More than enough. And I'm telling you right now, in major cases, there's some background noises going on there somewhere.
Yeah, I thought it was.
Sounds like somebody's driving or something. But anyway, look, in major cases, in major criminal cases, much evidence is often excluded from the trial. The judge will rule it inadmissible or be impeached at trial on testimony, and it gets excluded. But the person, there's enough evidence that is uncontroverted that is left over that allows for that person to be convicted. I say to you, it was the same with O.J. Simpson. Even when they had Mark Furman on the stand, they really couldn't find anything that he did. I'll do that real quick. Then you could go ahead and try to impeach me. But I'm saying that even when they had him on the stand, even when they had Mark Furman on the stand, his actions at the scene with regard to preserving evidence were by the book, by LA police, evidence procedural preservation rules. He admonished the investigators that they could be violating them when they came on the scene. He made a note of it in his reports. What they got him on was his alleged perjury about the use of the N-word. And by the way, I will note to you, the O.J. trial was the first time, or it began when you could no longer use the N-word in polite custody. You could not say N-I-G-G-R-E-R as a whole word anymore. And it started there with the O.J. Simpson trial. Hey, Shabaka, I'm just noting that's where it began. That was the genesis of what we're seeing now. This was a hugely significant event, more so for culture and jurisprudence than for the actual facts of the trial itself.
Okay, now, Sarge, you are aware of the fact that Marsha Clark and Christopher Durden were involved in a romantic relationship, are you not?
I can't I've heard that they were
involved in a romantic relationship. Just like Fanny Willis.
Wait a minute. Let me tell you. But before you start trying to make some kind of superficial comparison, you better make clear what the differences were. Because it was not illegal. It was not illegal or unethical for Fannie Willis per se to have an intimate relationship with Nathan Wade. You know what was problematic about what she did? Not just having a relationship. That wasn't the issue. She had hired him and paid him. Marsha Clark did not hire Christopher Darden. Be careful, because you know you will get away with that with me. You know you're not going to get away with it.
Oh, my God.
Sarge, I'm just relating facts that I've lived through on that, okay? You say, Sarge, my point of reference is my life experience. Okay, now keep in mind, my mind ain't what it used to be, is because I think, Brother Che, at that time I was in your age group. In fact, that I was. Okay. Yeah. Now, when they brought in, now here's the part right here. When they brought in Dr. Henry Lee, the coroner, when he was looking at the placement of how the LAPD was tainting the evidence about swatches and about other evidence, okay, and Dr. Henry Lee said, something not right, okay? All right, that's probable cause right there for a not guilty verdict to me. You see what I'm saying? And then they asked one of the jurors with Dr. Coates last night on Cartoon Nazi Network, okay, and then she had stated that the case was tainted, and we had voted it not guilty because the case was tainted against O.J. They hated O.J. Simpson because he was up there with Miss Becky. That's what it was. Miss Becky came up dead. But however, just as long as when white celebrities, when they bad wenches come up dead, oh, she's on drugs. Oh, she was this. She was that. You see what I'm saying? That's all I'm saying, people. You
now,
know what I mean?
I'm really fascinated to you give so much weight to Dr. Lee, the coroner's report. And when I pointed out the three coroner's report in the George Floyd case, you were utterly dismissive of them. But
because
now all of a sudden the judge and the guy does something in this case.
Tainted.
Now that's gospel truth. But when I pointed out the three autopsies in George Floyd's case that supported my position, you are utterly dismissive of them.
Because it was a lie, sons. Because
say it to me. There you go. No narration.
We're not talking about.
I'm
going
to stay on the topic.
I will speak
to what Dr. Lee said. I will speak to it. I'll say, fine, you're right. Dr. Lee did say that. That doesn't mean you don't get to question what he says in cross-examination, even if he is the coroner, just like in George Floyd.
Oh,
this is my point.
Okay.
That's the point. That's the point of a judicial proceeding. Nobody's word, when you get to testify in a trial, you get cross-examined if the defense or the prosecution wants to cross-examine you. That's the whole point of it.
Sarge, the fact of the matter is, Sarge, you know it, I know it, that savage Mark Furman knew it. O.J. Simpson didn't kill those people, Sarge.
Exactly.
Now, Sarge, you
have
football,
right?
Did you say
he killed them?
No, they all know that O.J. did not kill those people. And the reason why I'm saying it is here is because of the injuries that Mr. Simpson had sustained in his career. The man had three knee surgeries. He could barely walk.
Right.
Okay, now you ain't looking at that there, Sarge.
I am.
You're factoring all that in,
I am.
Sarge.
No, I'm not.
On top of it, Sarge.
Well, you haven't heard my response to what he just said yet, have you?
Okay,
no.
Come on, Sarge.
All right, okay. Now, you have seen and you've heard the rage that O.J. Simpson would go into on his phone calls with Nicole Simpson. You heard it.
Wait a minute now.
Would you concede to me that it was certainly elevated amounts of sheer utter rage? Do you know what that frequently induces in a human being? Adrenaline flow. Adrenaline flow cuts pain. The pain you feel that limits your range of motion because you feel the pain when you move your knees and your arms. Guess what? That adrenaline is just like an opiate. It's just like a shot of anesthetic.
Sarge.
So you're going to tell me Sarge. That he was so crippled that the rush of adrenaline from an enraged former premier ace one athlete. And it's a shame that one of the greatest running backs of all time is going to be remembered more for this than he is for the incredible career he had as an athlete. I think that's a damn shame, but that's just the way it is. But that's what he was. He was a premier grade one athlete who knew how to play through pain, and he was enraged. And the adrenaline, no doubt, would have enabled him to overcome and overlook that thing like it wasn't even there. I know it because I've been there. I know what happened to me when I got shot and I got wounded and I could hardly move. And I still moved in and got scared to death.
That was before you
came. No, that's about when I got shot. That's about when I got shot in Vietnam.
Oh, that was definitely a napkin holder.
So, yeah, hey, look, man, I know. And a round from an RPD or an AK bounced up my rib cage and broke three of my ribs. And I could hardly breathe.
Man.
With the fear and the panic, and I got the adrenaline going so I could do what I had to do. When I stopped and it was over, I could hardly even breathe. Moving was painful.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so, Sarge, you're talking about what they would call in the Shaolin teachings of inner strength, right? Mind over matter.
Yeah, but your human body is the way it's doing that. You guys are not giving enough credit to what the human body's capable of under stress.
Sarge, if the blood won't fit, you must acquit. That's all I know.
Now, hold on, brother.
Hey, okay, let's talk about
before.
That, too. Let's talk about
okay,
that, too.
I'm getting ready. Okay, hold on, Sarge. Now I'm coming at you with three left jabs, and I'm going to cross, hook, uppercut, left hook again, and then I'm going to knock you on your ass, okay? As Johnny Cochran had stated, we got the murder gloves right here, okay? DNA is on it, okay, from the murder victims, okay? So Mr. Cochran says to Mr. Simpson, please put the gloves on. The gloves do not fit, Sarge, and if it does not fit, you must acquit. Okay. Now, then I remember that Lance Ito, with his biased self, who really, in my opinion, should have been recused from the case, okay, as the judge, like what Charles Manson did in the same courthouse where he fired about three judges in his case, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But we're not going to talk about that, okay? All right. So the gloves did not fit, okay? There was a little scratch on OJ's finger. Okay, Mr. Simpson had stated when questioned about it is that when he got the news of his wife being dead, he had slammed down the phone. Okay, now, there are those who have lost spouses. When you get such news, you see what I'm saying? It's nothing nice. Okay, so you're going to have some type of voluntary or involuntary reaction upon getting such news. Now, ask yourself this here, Sarge. Now, O.J. went to Chi-Town. He went there to your neck of the woods, out there in DuPage County, Sarge, although you was in Crook County. Okay, why didn't O.J., if he knew that he had done this, didn't simply hop a flight and go to New York or better yet just leave the country? Riddle me that, Sarge.
You do realize that, look,
I can't hear you, Sarge.
You do realize, man, you don't let me get a word in anyway. Good God.
I put my phone on mute for 10 minutes.
O.J. Simpson was not a master criminal, okay? I have no doubt that when he was a young man, he did a little gang things and all that sort of stuff, but he wasn't no master criminal of any sort. I mean, he didn't think this through. I mean, it is easy to understand why he would have gaps in what his story should have been had he been a master coming criminal out of a Hitchcock movie. No, he wasn't that.
Uh-huh.
So I'm not at all surprised by any inconsistency in either his actions or his story.
Okay, as we already know, Sarge, we have established the fact that something not right. We established the fact that one of the lead investigators under the command of Lieutenant Van Ladder, who is a crash officer, Community Resources Against Street Hoodlums, which is LAPD's thug group, you know, their leg breakers and what have you. Now we're getting ready to get to this here, Sarge, as I say again. And Dr. Bay, ma'am, if you could still be with us, please elaborate and offer some insight on this. The interrogation tactics of one of the most notorious police departments in the world. Excuse the language that I'm going to use. You take five NGRs, okay? The first one, You beat the second one worse than you did the first one, Sarge. Then you beat the third one worse than you did the second one, Sarge. The fourth one is going to tell you, Sarge. And the fifth one is going to confirm the story of what you need to know to go make your illegal arrest using excessive force with the battle ram, you know, that Daryl gave you, Danny. Okay, yeah. Okay. All right. So what do you got to say about that one, Sarge? Sarge, I can't hear you, Sarge.
Well, wait a minute. I'm missing a thrust. I had a bad connection. I missed the thrust of your argument.
How convenient.
Could you restate the thrust of your argument, please?
Yes, sir.
I heard what you said about Van Adder. I heard at the beginning you mentioned Van Adder, but after that it was all staticky. I couldn't make it out. So go
okay,
after you mentioned the crash ops
okay,
instead of Van Adder.
Okay, Lieutenant Van Adder, he was the lead investigator of the case. They were all out of the West L.A. division. Okay, so Mark
right.
Furman, you know, he gets called up on his interrogation techniques of a tape that was played in court of their interrogation tactics when it comes to black males. And Dr. Bay, these are Mark Furman's words, ma'am, and I'm sure that you're familiar with them. And Furman says, no, Mark Furman. Yeah, not Furman, Furman. Okay, so Furman, he gets up there and says, when we interrogate cases, we take 5 NGRs. We beat the first one. You know, we get target practice in with our left hooks, right hands, overhand, right uppercuts, you know, handcuffs, brass knucks, elbows, you know, the whole 9 yards, blackjacks, what have you. Then we take the second NGR, and we beat him worse than we did the first one. Then we get the third one, beat him worse than the second one. The fourth one is going to tell us what we want to know, and the fifth one is going to confirm it. And then we go over there to Gil Garcetti's office, go get arrest warrants, search warrants, what have you. And then we take the battle ram, and then we tear down their house. You see what I'm saying? To go find the evidence that we planted. Okay, now, Sarge, what do you got to say about that?
All of the words everything you just alluded to was from the script for his movie and his book.
Oh my God.
He did not do that to O.J. Simpson in the interrogation because, like you just got through saying, he wasn't the one running in the interrogation. That was Van Adder's team that was doing that, not
that
Mark Furman.
Was a part of.
Wait a minute, though. The words you just said about those techniques were from a script for a movie. It was introduced in the trial. That's what F. Lee Bailey introduced in the trial. Will you stop trying to pull that off?
Hold on, Sarge. Glad you brought up F. Lee Bailey. Now, get this here, folks. Sarge just brought up a memory.
I can't believe what
he
just tried to do.
Hold on, Sarge. Now, with F. Lee Bailey, and please correct me if I'm wrong.
Why did he try to get away with that one, man? That was
Hold on. The deputy chief, George Gascon was brought up on the witness stand, and F. Lee Bailey had asked him what were the procedural methods of making an investigation in a 187A case, murder in the first degree under California law. F. Lee Bailey had George Gascon look like an idiot, okay? Bailey had the procedures, you know, as per the LAPD manual. George Gascon, man, couldn't even answer the question. So now you got a deputy chief, Sarge, okay, who doesn't know the policy that he swore to uphold and enforce. You see what I mean? So what about that?
Yeah, he sounds like the police chief in Minnesota. Hey, he sounded like that police chief in Minnesota. He didn't know the procedure of his own damn department either. What is with these police chiefs in the Democrat Party?
You need to do Derek Chauvin, Sarge, but don't get diversionary, Sarge. You're not going to get away. I'm cutting off the reins.
After what you did with Mark Furman, I deserve one, too. I admit, that's what I just did. But, you got another police chief that doesn't know his department's rules, regulations, and training, but he gets up there in court and he's going to be able to testify on behalf of the police department? What's wrong with these Democrat police chiefs?
Sorry.
So I'm going to give you that one. I mean, hey, I'm going to have to give you that one. The guy's incompetent.
Okay,
that's what.
Okay, Sarge, that's the point. The whole LAPD is incompetent. It's a terrorist organization.
Okay, so that means that the evidence found in his truck, that means the evidence found in his apartment, that means the evidence found on his socks, that means all of that is inadmissible because this police chief is a boob. You exclude his testimony. You don't get rid of the other stuff. That's not undocumented.
You talking about Willie Williams or Daryl Gates? Which police chief are you talking about? Daryl Gates or Willie Williams?
Did Daryl Gates testify the other day, says the trial? If he didn't, I ain't interested. We're talking about the police chief that testified at the O.J. Simpson trial.
Sir, Daryl Gates was no longer the police chief during the O.J. Simpson
trial. Okay, so he's not relevant. Unless his training has something to do with it. Some training he instituted that was directly related to materials of the case.
Sarge, just admit that O.J. Simpson case was tainted, and it was. Okay. Now, Dr.
No, I'm not.
Says,
I'm going to respond to every point that you make, and I'm going to keep doing it.
Okay, great, Sarge. I'm going to keep looking at his jab. Hand right upside your dome. Okay,
and
now,
I'm counterpunching.
And I'm elusive as a hummingbird. Okay,
says
and
you.
I can get out of more than a locksmith. Okay.
Yeah, says you.
No, I'm Sarge. I'm merely stating facts. Okay, now Sarge.
Okay.
Have your coffee. Don't have an aneurysm on us, Sarge. Okay, we understand you love the LAPD. You love the Chicago
Police
Department.
No, I don't. Police, I like a little bit more, but I ain't crazy about LAPD. Don't you get that? Don't you get no idea like that now?
Try getting stopped by them like how I have been.
I am not crazy about the LAPD. Some things about them I like, but in the main, I think they've been guilty of a particular type of corruption that comes from arrogance.
Okay, well, they're a terrorist organization, Sarge.
I don't agree with that at all.
Sarge, live a few years in Los Angeles like I did, man, and I think you'll be of a different opinion because, after all, Sarge, you're still a black man in America.
I tell you what. You go look at what happens now in certain places, Los Angeles, where the police don't have that kind of influence, and you are really seeing terrorism at work in the form of anarchy. Now, if you like that kind of thing, then you be my guest. I would submit to you the LAPD kept much of that kind of terrorism at bay.
Okay, let's stay focused, Sarge. Now, let's stay focused. Okay, now.
I'm
going to
be crazy about the LAPD to understand that.
Okay, Sarge, now, moving right along, okay, because we only have less than an hour, okay, and we appreciate Dr. Bay of taking time out of her busy schedule for joining us this morning. And once again, Dr. Bay, thank you so very, very much. Now, the person who I would really love to have on this show right now would be Cheryl Dorsey. Okay, the author of the book Black and Blue, okay? I'm sure you're familiar with Sergeant Cheryl Dorsey, right, Sarge? She testified in the George Floyd case. The LAPD use of force experts had said with George Floyd that was beyond protocol, and my mouth fell open, okay? You know what I'm saying? The main terrorist organization, the LAPD, they the ones who invented SWAT. Do you know what I mean?
Well, here's the problem with that testimony by that LAPD officer. It wasn't out of the protocol of the Minneapolis Police Department. And that was shown to be true because the day this became public, you know me, I was a police firearms and use of force instructor, state policeman. I went to the City of Minneapolis website, to the Police Academy training divisions right there on their website, and I looked up their procedures for what they call the maximal restraint technique. That is the technique that Officer Darren was using on George Floyd. And guess what? He was doing it exactly the way he had been certified and trained to do by the Minneapolis Police Department. That was verified by the trial testimony. So no matter what that LAPD officer testified to, he was not testifying to the procedures that were in effect at the time George Floyd incident occurred.
Can we, the doctor would like to speak. I thought I heard her water.
Oh, yeah, Dr. Bay. Dr. Bay, ma'am, your comments,
Jesus,
ma'am.
Calm down, fellas.
Well, I just wanted to round off as a lesson learned with the OJ's trial, that even though he passed away from prostate cancer, and this is something I believe we need to really highlight, especially with African-American men, prostate cancer is a number one killer.
Mm-hmm.
And he could have probably lived another 20 more years had this not been an issue. So you got to live your life accordingly. You got to eat healthy. You got to have good karma, you know, and overall, you know, even though OJ is a black man, you know, there are a lot of things that he could have done a little better, a little differently, or more inspiring for black youth, you know. But the first and foremost thing is to have black power. I mean, you can love anyone you'd like to. You can marry whoever you like to. But at the end of the day, if you go home to someone that doesn't look like you in the black experience, then you really are disconnected from black empowerment. And that's my only thing with OJ. You know, the trial was telltale sign of redemption in the black community, and as jurors even admitted. You know, the cool part about it is that I think Christopher Darden was actually running for office, if it's not Congress or Senate. And I'm not too keen on him, because he was indirectly involved in the case of Nipsey Hussle's killer.
Yeah.
He was actually defending him. And so that, it seems like that we have to have moral ground, you know. And Johnny Cochran, a lot of people believe that Johnny Cochran was killed, but Johnny Cochran was a high-powered attorney, and he was always on his cell phone. Now, we have to understand the cell phones at that time is not as safe as it is now. There's a lot of
the radiation,
energy that goes through that they didn't really. Now it's a little better checked with today's cell phone, but, you know, because of that, you know, we lost a great man, and Johnny Cochran, Cochran Associates, they did a lot for the black community. So
our hearts and minds
go to his legacy, and you know, really, there isn't a. Even in his sons, they weren't as strong as Johnny was himself. So that's really, it really was a trial and error. It was a very powerful case. I think it really changed the views of how the courts are ran. Again, like you said, it was a media circus. But the outcome is, I believe if you live your best life, then you won't die disease ridden in the end. But overall, as a black man, hey, stick with the black woman. That's the best thing I can tell you, because at the end of the day,
most definitely.
Well,
it didn't work so good for P. Diddy.
Didn't
work so good for P. Diddy.
Whoa. No over talking the doctor. No over talking the doctor.
I did wanted to give some updates concerning Haiti.
Please do.
Yes. As you know, I've been running for office in Haiti. It's been a chaotic shit show. So right now you have the Kenyan troops that have been paid by the U.S. $300 million for them to enter into Haiti, despite of the negotiation tactics. The fact is, the other day, I believe, the White House had a briefing concerning Haiti, and it was very disrespectful, to say the least. It was
only
a 30-minute briefing. It was supposed to be 45 minutes. They started 20 minutes late, so you know Karine Jean-Pierre, the White House press secretary, who was also Haitian.
Right.
She did opening, and it was, like, very rushed. But what was even more disturbing is that if you research April 9th White House briefing on Haiti, you won't find anything. But good old Truth Day, yes, I did. I sure did record it. And what was disturbing is that they had people that were speaking, about four or five people that were speaking from the UN Security Council, Brian Nichols. But there's one particular lady. Her name was Lauren Michaels. She's the head of national security. And she was asked the question, why is there so many influx of guns going to Haiti? Because one of the things that Governor DeSantis, he's been doubling up on the border, but he has crickets when it comes to the high-powered military ammunition that has been funneled through Haiti, but yet they find difficulty sending humanitarian efforts, such as food and water. I find it very strange. So they really do want to have a genocide amongst the African nation, African population in Haiti. And I want us to be very educated on politics. We have not given a fuck about politics here in the state, which is why we're still waiting for reparations, which is why we are still getting the short end of the stick. We're considered a permanent underclass. These are the things that we got to start being involved in, because even though we're not involved in politics in the U.S., politics in Haiti is just the same. You have the U.S. White supremacy that has been raping and pillaging Haiti's resources. And then the other day, yesterday, a matter of fact, they had a nice Biden. Joe Biden had a very expensive dinner catering to the representatives of Japan. And, of course, you had Jeff Bezos and other people there. But what was more disgusting was the Clintons. The Clintons were the one that took almost $1 billion in Haitian blood money. And here you go,
yes, ma'am.
You see Hillary and Bill waltzing in the dinner like they own the White House. No, they're not giving them the keys back, but overall she should be in jail. They should be in jail. So we got to start being more politically astute as to stand up for what's right. We can't be, we cannot continue to be lackluster in politics and think that things will change. There has to be a change. But I can guarantee you, as long as I live, my efforts to try to get Hillary Clinton and Joe and William under the jail
for the
sake of my Haitian people is exactly the fight that I'm going to continue to do. So with that being said, thank you for having me on, and we'll give you some more updates on Chewbacca's Black Experience, Peace and Black Power.
Okay, Black Power.
Yes, ma'am. And, and Black Power to you, Dr. Bay, ma'am. And I wish you very, very well on your endeavors. And thank you so very, very much, ma'am, of taking time out of your busy schedule of appearing on Grand Rising with Chewbacca's and the Chays this Friday morning. And the air date of this episode is April the 12th, 2024. Okay, Dr. Bay, thank you so very, very much, ma'am. And of course, we wish you well in your endeavors. Okay, now here we go. We have an unknown call. Yes, ma'am. Okay, we have an unknown caller right here, and just press 1, and we'll be more than happy to bring you on the air. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, okay, Orenthal James Simpson, he was 76 years of age, you know, upon his passing, and from what I understand is that he did pass away here in Las Vegas, Nevada. But the fact of the matter is, ladies and gentlemen, you know, over the years that we've been doing Chewbacca's Black Experience Enhanced, okay, race relations, throw it out the window. It does not exist, okay? We do not endorse the illusion of inclusion. That's for suckers, okay? Right. When we as a people endorse this warped doctrine, we are banging our head against the wall and expecting a new result every time. That is not intelligent. Okay. First place, as far as race relations is concerned, what it is that we in the diaspora, along with those on the continent, need to get rid of these neo-colonialists. Now, Sarge, run this back to Joe Gibson, because I see he didn't call in this morning. Man,
he
we
did,
understand
he
that you all cannot.
He did, and then when I announced that it was him, he hung up.
Oh, wow. Let's check our hate mail in the chat room, Brother Che. Yes, let's check our hate mail. Okay, and keep those cards and letters coming, folks. You know what I'm saying? Okay, nobody's in the chat room this morning. Okay, I wonder why. Because they cannot deal with this heat. That's why. They cannot deal with the Black First agenda. That's why. Mm-hmm. And then we're supposed to sit up here, be yaz and bars, and, you know, Uncle Tim Scott, zippity-doo-dah, zippity-day. I got plenty of nothing, and nothing's plenty for me.
Scott, what's up with your boy Larry Elders? I heard he got his start by running with the lie that O.J. did it.
Larry Elders. Yeah, Larry Elders, yeah. He is one sick individual, him and Leo Terrell, and you, Mr. Elders, are welcome to call in. It's because the biggest lie you ever told, Elders, that you grew up in South Central L.A. You grew up in a Crenshaw district, okay? Same thing with Leo Terrell. Now, when you get these sycophant Negroes who love Donald Duck Dump and no hiding Biden, you know, who's having bathroom problems, you know, and he needs to change his diapers more regular, you know what I mean? We are in a sad state of affairs, Black family. Okay, we got to think of Black first. Let's be real. Integration has not, does not, and will not work. We have to become self-sufficient, you know, controlling our own economics, because we got to produce our own agricultural products. Also, to definitely keep the fight up for reparations. It is a uphill battle. And then for those who I've argued and debated with, oh, no, none of you Negroes were slaves. But what they forget, folks, is the power of the parlay. And by the way, Sarge, if you speak to Joe before I do, The tab now is up to $750 trillion in tangibles. Okay.
Info, penny out for a pound.
Sarge. Okay.
Oh my goodness.
Sarge, let's get a quadrillion.
We're gonna get the quadrillion soon.
Yep, damn
near quad.
It's 900.
Sarge, rather if you realize it or not, okay, sir, and I know that you're older than me, okay, is that this country owes a debt. The day of the Yasser boss, the day of the ass scratcher, the day of the coon is
over.
Okay, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, Sarge. Now, I probably will not see it in my lifetime, Sarge. You see what I'm saying? But as long as I'm here above dirt, I'm going to still keep pushing the fight, because you're going to give reparations to the Japanese that were interned. Okay, they keep sending money over there to Israel. You see what I'm saying? But we're supposed to be the old happy-go-lucky Negro, the old Yazavaz, Uncle Tim, Scott, Larry Elders, Leo Terrell, you know what I mean, and stuff like that. I'm just American. No, your ass is a descendant of slaves. Now, Sarge, I'm reading up here Profiles in Courage, authored by the one and only Mr. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And Mr. Jabbar says that we're just as American as everybody else. No, we're not. Okay, what we are is that we are second and third class citizens that keep the crux of the U.S. economy that's going on. They're giving more to these migrants than us, as Dr. Claude Anderson has stated. So what it is us versus everybody, or let's say it's everybody versus us. But here's the irony about it, though. All these white boys out here who hate black men in particular, why do they want to lay with black women? Enlighten me on that there, Sarge.
Because men like to lay with women. I start talking right away, and you tell me I'm stuttering. I'm not stuttering. I'm answering the question. Because men like to lay with women that they find attractive, whether they're Asian, black, or white. This is what all men do. Haven't you noticed this? Mm-hmm. All around the world, this is what men do. That's why. It ain't hard.
Okay.
It ain't complicated.
Okay, hold on, Sarge. Hold on, Sarge. Hold on, hold on. But you saw what happened to O.J. Simpson with his involvement with that white woman, right?
Mm-hmm. Wait a minute. Wait a minute, man. Okay, look. See, every time I get to start to ask you, then you can't hear me. You better pick the wax out your ears, because I speak quite loudly. I'm very emphatic.
Okay, Sarge, you
are. All right, man, look. Okay, wait a minute now. Hold it. Let me explain. Look, P. Diddy's got a problem with his black woman, ain't he? And women. Okay? You look, men have trouble with women. Hey, what about Sidney Poitier's marriage to his white wife? It was pretty successful, wasn't it? You don't want to talk about that because it was successful. You can have a bad marriage with any woman.
Once again, Sarge, I'm getting ready to cut the ring off for you. Please answer the direct question. Like
again,
we had an argument
it's one marriage. Hey,
okay,
it's one marriage. You cannot set the standard for all marriages by the success or failure of any one marriage.
Okay, Sarge, with you being a black man in America, okay,
good
let's
night,
say you and I...
a black woman for 30 years.
Hold on, Sarge. Sarge,
I was married to a black woman for 30 years. I wouldn't have traded it for any other woman on the planet. Any white,
okay,
black,
Sarge.
Asian, whatever.
Okay, Sarge. Let me explain something to you. The basic.
Hey,
of
they
the gonna
tell me about the wonders of black women. I know how wonderful they can be.
Okay, but Sarge. Okay, but what I'm saying though, Sarge. Okay, there's two things that don't last long. That there is a dog chasing cars and a black man chasing white women. Okay,
oh,
you see what I'm
God.
Saying? Okay, me personally, one black woman who I had, two black women in the Hollywood movie making industry who I had the utmost of respect for. One was Cicely Tyson, and another one was Ruby Dee. Okay, they did not partake, excuse the language, Dr. Bay, if you're still within earshot of us, they did not partake, as far as I know, in this whoredom of Hollywood, okay? And, Sarge, you need to look at my video that I brought when I was out there in Angel Town a couple of years ago, where Brother Che was on a live feed with me, and I went up there to TMZ, and Brother Che had immediately sent me an alert, get away from TMZ. They are the police. You see what I'm saying? So I heeded, you know, the young brother's advice, you see? But the fact of the matter is, Sarge, they want to kill the black family unit is because the black family unit is the basis of the black nation. They want to take the black male out of the household is because only a man could teach a boy how to be a man. Now, their main insult to womanhood, a main insult to the sanctity of womanhood, is some dude shoving ketchup up his rectum talking about he's having a menstrual cycle. This is one confused individual. Also, two Sarge, the buck-breaking farms we never got, you know, your comments on. As Tariq Nasheed had done with the, what is that there, Brother Che, the Hidden Colors, I believe? Okay. And the only thing... No, yes, sir, the buck breaking. Okay, and they would always have the black man's son who they did this to. They would bring his son front and center to instill the fear in him at a young age so he does not rebel. Also, too, to the great Ned Turner who witnessed the solar eclipse. And he had stated that there was a sign from him, from the Almighty, to go out there, man, and exact revenge. Okay, now, I would debate with any of these ass-scratching Yasa-boss Negroes who are more in love with the slave master than their own people. I understand. As Dr. Marimba Ani had stated in her work, who was a student of the one and only Dr. John Henry Clark, the Ma'afa, a disaster so bad it is beyond
descriptions. Now, Sarge, you, Joe Gibson, Illusion, or whatever his name was. Illusion don't even talk to me no more because, you know, the heat. Okay. And then I think I was on Joe's show, and then, you know, Bianchi tried to talk to me, and I don't recognize Bianchi. Okay, it's because what happens is, it's not that I dislike these men, it's that I feel sorry for them, okay? It's because they are going through cognitive dissonance. You see what I'm
yep.
saying? As I believe, who was that there? Fana. I believe Brother Che that explained, yeah, who had explained, you know, about the willful ignorance, you know, and then to quote the words of Professor Black Truth, okay, white supremacy always breaks its rules, okay. Yeah, Candace Owens, you know, is the latest tragedy on this, and I would say something, but I'm not because ladies are present, and you know where I'm going with this here, Brother Che. Okay. Yes, see, but we as men are supposed to sit there, allow our mothers, wives, daughters, what have you, to be violated by these cave beasts, and we're supposed to sit up there and love them. I don't understand that, Sarge. You're a little bit older than me, man. Maybe you can show me something. You have the floor, Sarge, on that.
Again, I'm trying to understand how it is that, you know, when you see a failed marriage, black people don't even get married.
Black men and black women of marriageable age,
70% of black men of marriageable age are not married. Now, that is a fact. You can be cognitively dissonant all you want, but it's true. Once upon a time, 80%. Once upon a time, 80%. Of marriageable black men and women were married. What the hell do you think happened to change all that?
Sarge.
White raping, slave trading, pedophile.
Wait a minute, this was in the 1940s.
Like Thomas Jefferson, okay, of how the Ku Klux Klan would castrate black men in the presence of their wives and daughters and go
violate them. In the 1940s, black people were married at an 80% rate. In the 1920s.
Okay. Sorry.
Why are you pretending like it's not true?
Okay, Sarge, you have to blame an institution called Hollywood for that. Okay, all righty. But what it is, though, Sarge, when such individuals such as myself, such as Brother Che here, Dr. Truth Bay, Sheikh Imam Akbar, you know, that you've went back and forth with on our platform, okay, when we mention this, then all of a sudden we are called black racists. There's no such thing as a black racist, Sarge, because we don't control no economics. We don't control no police department. Tell me what a black racist is, Sarge.
Shabaka, you do realize I am old enough to have grown up in an era where just about every adult I knew was either married and a few of them had been divorced, but every adult person I knew either was married or had been married, and they were all black. And now you're pretending like that's not true.
Okay, now, Sarge, let me ask you this question, Sarge. Now, let me ask you
this
question.
Wait a minute, would you please respond to what I said? Why are you pretending that it wasn't so?
Okay, Sarge.
Especially the young man here, he's saying, well, that wasn't true. That today it's true that most black people get married. And that definitely isn't true anymore.
Yes, it is, Sarge.
Okay, but Sarge, the black family unit has been shattered, okay, due to the Ma'afa is the point of what I'm getting at, okay. Now, we don't see Joe Gibson. We don't have any hate mail, unfortunately, because, once again, there's no argument.
Well, wait a minute, Shabaka, how many times have you heard me say, if I had a magic wand and there was one thing I could fix in the black community either by edict or by waving my magic wand, and I only had one thing I could do. The one thing I would do is to wave that magic wand and have black men marry the women they impregnate and women marry black men and restore the nuclear black family. It is the one thing that I would do over and above everything else.
Damn, Sarge, we finally agree on something.
I said that over and over and over again. You guys act like this is something new for me. I've been saying this for decades.
You said we're not getting married like we used to be getting married, and that's just not
the
true.
The black father is indispensable in the lives of his children.
Okay,
the black father is more involved in his children's life than any other race of men.
See, that's a myth.
No, Sarge, that's a fact.
That's not true. Once upon a time it was true. It ain't true today.
Sarge.
They did a number on the black community, the Democrats, LBJ, and the welfare state. They did a number on the black community, and they ruined us in that respect.
Sarge, no. You're not going to get away with those white rings.
Oh, no, I know better. Life experience tells me differently.
Let me ask you this here, Sarge. You said that you was married to a black woman for 30 years, right?
Over 30 years, 32, actually, because she died.
Okay. Now,
and I wouldn't trade it with any other woman on this planet. Any other woman of any race on this planet.
Okay, hold on, Sarge. For once, Sarge, we are agreeing agreeably, okay? It's because the black woman is God. She is the mother of humanity.
Well, I'm not
going to
say that either.
Okay, and I don't understand, you know, why black men like O.J. Simpson, Jim Brown, you know, will go out here and chase these barbecue Beckys. I don't understand that.
Remember, Jim Brown, most of his relationships were with black women. I don't know where you get that from. He might have had one or two affairs with white women, but most of his relationships were with black women.
Okay,
remember Brenda Sykes?
Okay.
He's married to a black woman.
Sarge. Do you know how many times do you know how many times that Jim Brown, man, has been in the L.A. County Court System, man, behind domestic violence?
I know that. I'm not saying he excluded white women. He didn't. I'm saying that when it came to making a stable relationship of any sort or long-term commitment, he was with a black woman. The man was a sex symbol, for God's sake. One more throwing themselves at him all the time.
Sorry.
Not many men are going to, it takes a lot of character for most men to turn down good-looking women throwing themselves at your feet. But I'm just saying, when Jim Brown had a relationship of any duration and any sort of commitment, it was with a black woman, like Brenda Sykes, for instance.
Okay, now, glad you brought up Brenda Sykes. Okay, ever since she made that garbage called Mandingo, have you seen Sykes in any major films?
No.
Oh, yeah. Oh, most definitely, Sarge, because see, you got a crumb bomb on that plantation system. You see what I'm saying? You got the crumb bomb on it. You know what I mean? And then the whole part about it, too, Sarge, is this. Okay, but why do these white men feel...
So MD 2020, shout out to him. He said Pew Research did a study proving black men, based on several factors, spend more time with their children.
I've seen that study. It's nonsense. I saw that study. I looked into it. It's nonsense.
How is it
that
nonsense?
That study was skewed to those individuals living in immediate proximity with their children, like within the radius of a half a mile or less. That report. It's nonsense. It was an excuse and a rationalization for the destruction of the nuclear two-parent black family that these progressives have done to us for the last 60 years.
Ladies and gentlemen, there's never a dull moment here at Chewbacca's Black Experience.
These people are trying to rationalize the destruction they have wrought on our families. That's why they did that report.
Okay, Sarge. Okay, when I was a younger man, okay, I used to get approached, you know, by these blondies at times, and I would always reject them. You see what I'm saying? I always would reject them. Okay?
You don't have every right to do that, brother. Wait, you think I'm going to criticize you for deciding who you want to have the intimate relationship with? That's your business.
Okay. But Sarge, okay, but when you go into a sick, perverse institution, such as Hollywood, your Jeffrey Epstein's, your Harvey Weinstein's, let's see, the dude that went up there and violated Mr. Cruz, you know, Mr. Terry Cruz, you know, he was violated, and no disrespect to Mr. Cruz, you know, Mr.
Let's
Cruz did speak about it. Okay, is that what it is?
Yeah,
it's a power trip, okay? And we see Dr. Bay has dropped off, okay? And we appreciate Dr. Bay of taking time away from her busy schedule, you know, from joining us, okay? And we wish Dr. Bay the best in her endeavors of what she's doing in regard to Haiti, okay? Now,
Leave Haiti alone.
Okay, now, one thing, though, and I believe was it Dr. Francis Cress Wilson that said this here, Brother Chan, correct me if I'm wrong, that stated that the white cheerleaders are nothing more than the whores for the athletes in collegiate and professional sports. Okay. Okay. Very good. Very good. moving right along. And then when the owner of the Washington Commanders had stated that if black football players don't like of how they do things in a National Football League, that they should go out there and form their own leagues, I'm all for that. Anything to cripple the economy of white America, black family, if done properly, that there could be to our benefit. Inclusion is an illusion, okay? It is an illusion. It is one of the biggest lies and illusions. It might as well be in a damn Ripley museum, you know what I'm saying? Because of the day, folks, of the ass-scratcher. Is over. The day of the Yasa boss like Dr. Tim Scott or Senator Tim Scott or whatever what he was, who wants to sit up there, man, and bend over for his master, Donald Duck. And we're talking about the dump, as in human shit. And we want to make that perfectly clear. Okay. He states how, honestly, white America feels. So once again, black family, why are we banging our head against a wall? You know, and expecting a different result each time. Okay. We have to get our children out of these public indoctrination centers. Now, here's one for you, Sarge, that I know that you're going to love. Okay. All righty. A group of white folks had stated that the George Floyd scholarship violates parts of the Civil Rights Act. Okay, so when old John Lewis was getting his head busted in at the Edmund Pettus Bridge talking about good trouble, you see what I'm saying? And it's coming with this illusion of inclusion, which does not, will not, and cannot work. That's like saying 2 + 2 = 3, 2 + 2 = 5, 2 + 2 = 10, which is an absolute insult to our intelligence. Now, Sarge, how do you feel about that?
How do you feel, Sarge?
If the George Floyd scholarship is racially exclusionary, it is a violation of the Civil Rights Act. There's no getting around it. If it is, it is. If it isn't, then it isn't. It's that simple.
How?
Okay, now let me ask you this here, Sarge. I'm going to ask this
question. Wait a minute. One more thing. If public funds, that means taxpayer money, is being used for the scholarship, it is a civil rights violation. If it is privately funded, then it's nobody's business but the people who pay for the scholarship. But if it's publicly funded, it is a violation of the Civil Rights Act. For it to be racially exclusionary.
Okay, Sarge, once again, you're going with that philosophy, boss, we
I'm going with the law.
Now,
I thought you wanted to go with the law and OJ Simpson.
Okay, hold on, Sarge, hold on. Now, Sarge, let's turn back the hands of time, back to the dump regime, and that's what his presidency was, is a regime. You remember the case in Niger where U.S. Troop forces were in Niger? There was a black sergeant and three white boys who were killed, but allegedly, I believe, by Boko Haram or what have you there.
Yeah, I remember that quite well. Yeah, I remember
that. Hold on, Sarge. Hold on, Sarge. I'm getting ready to get to the crux of my point. The black sergeant was taken away from where they killed the white boys, okay, like about a mile off. And, of course, you know, he was executed. Then the dump, as in human shit, tells his family, well, the reason he died is because he knew what he signed up for. Do you see any significance in that of why they took the black soldier off alone and killed him, Sarge? Do you see any significance in that?
Wait a minute. What did you say that Trump said? Trump said he gave the reason of what being what?
He said
Trump had stated to his family, to his grieving widow, okay, is that he knew what he was signing up for, and he, as they say, poo-pooed the black soldier getting killed, and not to mention the three black soldiers who were killed recently, okay, over there in the Middle East. Okay, and now, you're a former soldier, Sarge, and you served in Vietnam, one of the most unjust wars that was never declared by the U.S. Congress. That was LBJ, you know, doing serving big business. Okay. Now,
yeah, I got shot.
If you're out there in a firefight, and if you had to pick, okay, well, your weapon, your M16 A1-3, you know, you got a 30-round clip in it, the banana clip, okay. And you're seeing two white boys getting pinned down. Okay,
yeah,
hold on, Sarge. You're seeing two white boys, the Viet Cong is stomping on them, and then they stomping on the brother as well, too, right? Who would you protect first, instinctively, under a stressful situation, being in combat? Whose life would you save, the white boys or the
brothers? Been there, done that. You go for the one you got the best chance of rescuing, and then you go for the next one if you can. That's the way you work.
Hold on, Sarge. We're saying
been there, done that.
All things.
Been there, done
that. Okay, Sarge. Okay. With everything being equal, okay, if you had the choice on equal leverage, equal position, you know what I'm saying, who would you save first? It's up to Sarge.
Which one is my friend? Is one of my better friends? I'm going for my buddy first.
No, Sarge. Let's just say that you met all three.
Whichever one I'm
tied
with first, if you're going to make it that kind of a choice.
Sarge.
Okay, now, Sarge. Okay, would you save the brother first out of instinct is what I'm saying. That's the question.
No.
You would not.
No.
So you would
honestly, no. Honestly,
so,
no. You just, in that kind of situation, you just don't think like that because you rely on each other too damn much. You just don't.
Okay, but Sarge. As Dr. Martin
Luther King. I'll tell you one thing. Even the guys who kind of thought that way in the rear, when they got out in the bush, they looked at the guys who you could count on. That counted more than anything else. It didn't matter what your damn color was. Who was the most reliable guy who could do what it had to be done? Who was the one who wouldn't fall asleep at night on guard? Who was the one who knew how to lay down the fire? Who was the one who knew how to give another guy first aid? Who was that guy? That was the guy. That was what you thought was more important. Now, when you got back to the rear, all that other crap started to rear its head.
Okay, now, Sarge, now let me ask you this here, Sarge. Okay, you've been in the military. Okay, you're in the middle of Niger. okay? Your commanding officer is a Southern white man, you know, stars and bars, you know what I'm saying, Confederate flag to the utmost, okay? You're going into a firefight, Sarge. Okay, so are you going to be the Tim Scott type of fighter who will lay his life down for his master, or you are you going to be the type that will sit up there and preserve his own first? Under those scenarios, Sarge. No, Sarge. No, I'm putting you in a box on that one. I'm cutting the ring off, Sarge.
I'm telling you, now you're going to tell me what I actually did and what I actually thought in those situations. And then you want to hear what I actually thought and did, or do you want to tell me what I thought and did?
No, Sarge. I'm drawing a scenario, Sarge. Okay. Your gut instinct. Okay, Sarge. When it comes down to it, are you going to save the brother first, or are you going to save the cracker first?
Okay, one more time. What I want to be is a comrade to the men whom my life depends on. I want to be a comrade to them, and I want to treat them the way I expect to be treated. And that's the way I tried,
Sarge,
to the extent I could, humanly possible.
Okay, Sarge. Okay. They cut off our chat room access. I wonder why. Okay, but Sarge, you did your, okay, that answer right there answers my question, Sarge. Okay. I'm gonna protect the brothers.
So I'll tell you one thing, though. See, here's the problem with your question. Your problem assumes I'm gonna be thinking about excluding anyone, black or white, and I'm not. I'm concerned with my comrades. Some of my best comrades were black men. Brother Will from South Carolina. Brother Will, man, I would follow that man into the gates of hell. He was a black-ass, big black man. I love that brother. I would have died for him. Hey, do you think there were some white boys I felt the same way about? I got news for you. There were.
Okay, Sarge.
I'm not screwing anybody that I can count on.
Okay, Sarge. Now, let me draw you another scenario. Okay, you're a war veteran, and I respect that. It's because I got many war veterans in my family that did go to Vietnam as well, too. Okay, but when it comes down to it, Sarge, in the end, okay, when Donald Duck Trump gets reselected, which he will, like I said, reselected, okay, and when the race war breaks out in this country, Sarge, and Uncle Tim Scott get up there with his stymie-looking, bald-headed ass, skinning and grinning, oh, Master Trump, I just love you. You see what I'm saying? Okay, he's going to be going down there for his master. You know it, and I know it. Okay, now, just like when Abdul-Jabbar has stated in Profiles in Courage that I am reading, Sarge, that you had a whole lot of black slaves that went up there and went and worked for old Master Washington. George Washington didn't even give them no recognition of the heroics and the courage that they did. Abdul-Jabbar says that we're just American as well, too. And I disagree with that. But it is as far as that we got to build up a Pan-African coalition to challenge and protect ourselves against worldwide racist white supremacy.
And you tell her.
Understand?
Look here. I'm going to tell you something, man.
Yeah.
I want you to go on the web, and maybe you'll be able to find it. It's a fairly well-known clip from the Vietnam War. It's three Marines, two white and one black. And these Marines are under fire.
Mm-hmm.
And they are running to get away from the fire. There's a little bit of depolade, like a little shelf, where the ground drops abruptly, and they get depolade from the fire that's clearly coming from their front, and they're trying to get behind it. The two white guys get down and get underneath where there's got depolated, and they're safe from the direct fire that's coming at him. The brother didn't. He gets hit, and he falls short of it. These guys get up over the little trench they're in. You can see the bullets hitting all around them. You can see where the bullets are impacting all around.
and they're risking their lives to pull their comrade, their black comrade, who's either dead or wounded. Mm-hmm. You can't tell, but you know he's been hit. He's like limp. And these mm-hmm. bullets are hitting around both the white Marines, and they're pulling their comrade back over to get him out of the line of fire so he doesn't get hit anymore. They are literally okay. risking their lives for their comrade, and they're safe from mm-hmm. the fire, at least mm-hmm. immediately. That's mm-hmm. what it was over there.
Okay,
all
now let me ask
that
you
we
this
didn't
here.
Care about. I mean, I'm serious. And I looked.
Okay.
There were frictions, and they would rear their ugly head when we got back in the rear. And I know mm-hmm. deny it that there was that stuff going on. But I'm saying, when you're in the FH and the IT, that don't matter a damn. It's who you can count on. That's what counts.
Okay, Sarge. Okay, now, Sarge, I can see your reasoning to a point. Okay, but when the race war breaks out here in the United States, which is
going to overtime, I got a quick question for Sarge. Is it true,
yeah.
Sarge, that the gap started during the Vietnam War?
What started in the Vietnam War?
The DAP. You always talking about there.
Oh, man, we used to do that all the time. No, man, we did that all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, you take 30, 40 seconds to give another guy a greeting. You hadn't seen it in a while. You be doing a DAP 30, 40, 50 seconds, maybe a minute or more. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now let me ask you this.
But look, man, all I'm saying is that you guys know about the 761st Tank Battalion, right?
Oh, yeah, I've heard of it,
yes. Heard about it.
Well, have you seen some of those interviews of those veterans before they passed on, and they're talking about how undefined, this is back in the 40s when racism was at its zenith, maybe, how their white comrades who they were supporting would save them. The one guy was talking about how a white soldier, when he was hit, ran out under fire, pulled him back. As they pulled him back undercover, he took a bullet in the head and blew this white boy's brains out. And he said he never forgot who this guy was, and he couldn't find who he was to thank him for saving his life. This is back during the 40s. And you send them interviews they had with those veterans in the 761st Tank. They got all kind of stories like that of them helping each other and aiding each other because it didn't matter at the front. Yeah, you get back to the rear, it rears its ugly head. Out there, it didn't matter worth a damn.
Mm-hmm.
It really didn't.
So therefore,
I mean, you guys, I know you guys may not understand that unless you've been in that situation. But I'm not talking about just the battlefield. I'm talking about like when you're sick because everybody's got some kind of sickness. They got malaria. You got dysentery. You got dengue fever. You got God knows what. You got some level of sickness. You get run into fever. You're sick. You still got to pull your watch at night. Your buddy comes in and mm-hmm. says, hey, man, I see you kind of bad. Look, I'll take your watch. I'll take your spent on the OP or the LP or whatever it is. You go get some more rest. Or maybe he shares his fruit cocktail with you. That's the last. Everybody loves a fruit cocktail. You ain't got no fruit cocktail. You need a fruit cocktail because it helps you get it. Man, he shares it with you. Little things like that. And they add up. And then we do it with each other all the time. If the guy gets something from home, they share it with everybody else. White, black, it didn't matter. Everybody did it.
Okay, so therefore.
Let me tell you something.
Yeah.
The ones who didn't do it got isolated. They got nobody wanted to have anything to do with them. And they knew they would either have to get with the program or they weren't going to last long.
Before we go on to overtime, is this your unknown caller? Who is this calling us?
Hey, you got me?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Greetings. This is Chef Rob. How we doing?
Hello, Chef Rob, man. How you doing? You just missed Dr. Toothpay, man. She was on earlier. Okay, Chef Rob, you know O.J. Simpson bought the farm. We got the one and only Sarge with us.
Let me say this real fast. I've been busy. I was trying to listen in and out, and there's a couple of times I wanted to chime in. Okay, so but I want to get to this. As much as I hate to say this, Sarge is actually right. I've been in that situation, and it's like a twofold thing. It's like a twofold thing, right? If you're here in the States going to train or whatever, all the white boys are going to be your enemies. But if you out there and the fucking bees flying, fuck it. You all mean, lean, green. Okay, so you better go ahead and protect him. And he's right. And the motherfuckers who don't stand up, fuck it. Let their asses go. I hate saying this, but that bastard is right. And I've been in that situation where you go ahead and watch the motherfucking little, where they trying to put his guts back in his motherfucking stomach. And you be like, God damn. And, but you still try to maintain. And at that time, it ain't black, it ain't white, it ain't green, it ain't brown. It's all green.
Okay, now let me ask you, gentlemen, this here, Chef Rob. Okay, I'm going to ask you and Sarge this. Okay, what about the case against the case about Mr. Isaac Woodard, who was a World War II veteran, okay, war veteran, and he just got his discharge papers from Fort Benning, Georgia, and he's on his way back into Carolina. And him and a bus driver on a Greyhound bus got into it because he had to use the restroom. Okay, so at the next town, the good old boy driving the bus stops and has some of the Klux boys come over there, grab Mr. Woodard off of the bus, and they beat Mr. Woodard to a pulp. And then not to mention the fact that the cop took his nightstick and busted out both of Mr. Woodard's eyes, and the man was blind for the rest of his life. Now, what about Sarge and Chef Rob?
Let me deal with it because
we're in overtime, gentlemen.
Sarge goes on for a long time, and it's ridiculous. But I've seen that situation. I've seen that situation with that brother. I read it. It was like in the 40s or 50s. Anyway.
Yes, sir. It was right after World War II. Yes, sir. That was
right.
World War II.
It's a twofold thing. If I'm here in the States, I'm going to go ahead and experience a lot of racism, which I have. I was down in Fort Leonard Wood, you know, Waynesville wasn't shit. I didn't been to a couple of other posts, and they was the same fucking thing. But if you go ahead, once you get over there, once you get to your spot, a lot of that racism, not all, but a lot of that racism ceases because you got to go ahead and make sure a motherfucker got your back, okay? So it's different. So, but if we, and it's situations where here in the state, we went to clubs, man, and shit, you talking about it race-wise, man, the motherfuckers, we done told the motherfuckers up. But you ain't going to do that shit overseas, because you're going to make sure everybody going to go ahead and throw bullets in that direction that's coming to you. I understand what you're saying.
Man, look, I'm telling you, look, just like I said, look, I appreciate Chef Rob backing me up on this, because it sounds like he knows what time it is, because that's the truth. And look, it's nothing. When you see some white guy in a chopper, you know it's a white guy. We know what white guys sound like. He's on a chopper. You listen on the horn. You got wounded. They got to be medevaced. You know, some of them are black. Some of them are white. They need urgent care immediately. They're out the zone. And the CO is telling, the authority is telling on the net, don't come in. The LZ's too hot. And you can hear this white boy say, I'll stop. I'll come out when I have your wounded. And this motherfucker come in any goddamn way, chasing all over the LZ, shit all over the place, and he's bringing this vulnerable chopper that's easy as hell to shoot down. He's bringing it in the midst of fire to take the wounded out. Man, that's what matters.
Okay.
People like that matter.
I hate
okay, now.
See, man,
hate
that's what I'm saying. This is what I'm saying, man. I'm trying to say this. I say that to say this. All this extraneous cultural shit, baggage that we bring to race relations, when all that shit is stripped away and the only thing that matters are the existential elements of survival, you see what counts, and that is a person's individual character.
Okay, Sarge, now guess what you just did, Sarge? You just supported our premise for the more reason for reparations, Sarge. I knew that you were a black man inside, because, ladies and gentlemen, inside every Negro, there's a black man dying to come out. And you just proved that, Sarge.
Okay. If I got to get it through the back door for agreement, I'll be happy with that. Fine, I'll take it.
I want to
go ahead. Okay, now let me ask you this. Yeah, go ahead, Chef Rob.
Well, it was two things. You were saying something about OJ. I want you to finish your thought. I apologize. And then I hate helicopters. I can't stand the motherfuckers to this day. I would never get on a goddamn roller coaster because it reminds me of that shit. And it took one time for that motherfucker to do a hard landing and we're going to slam onto the ground. My body still ain't recovered from that shit.
Oh, man. Ouch. Okay. All righty. Okay, so what it is, with both you gentlemen being combat veterans, when this shit is getting ready to hit the fan, which it will, is when the dump, as in human shit, and we want to make that perfectly clear, when he is reselected, which he will be, okay, and it comes down to it, okay, is where you're going to have this quote-unquote civil war, okay, is because these white boys is coming. You know it. I know it. They know it. Okay, so what are you going to do? Lock and load, or are you going to sit up there and sing, "We Shall Overcome"?
Let me address that.
You
hold
have
on,
the floor.
Don't go ahead and run your mouth here, Sarge, because like I said, you're long-winded. It's, like I said earlier, it's a two-pronged thing here. Okay, if I'm over there, and if I'm overseas and the motherfucker's going here, it's a problem over there. We trying to protect ourselves. Yeah, all I see is green. But in the state, oh, no. I want to make this point real quick. I keep hearing these stupid-ass mega motherfuckers go here and talk about, oh, it's going to be a civil war. You know, and I had to sit back and think. I remember all of the shit I saw when I was in the military. And even when I got out of the military, I worked for the Department of Defense, and I was working with Naval Ocean System Centers where they were going ahead and testing these different rockets and all this other shit, man. And I'm thinking, like, oh, yeah, Civil War. That shit going to last all of a few hours, maybe a whole day, because you don't have planes.
Okay.
You don't have boats. You don't have tanks. You don't have all the fucking equipment that the U.S. military got. You're going to go ahead and be locked up like all the January 6th motherfuckers, because you're stupid.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, Chef Rob, as you know, when they start the massive roundup of us, man, what they're going to do is that they're going to ship all these individuals, man, from the north, from the east, from the south. They're going to ship them all out there into the middle of this damn desert, man, in the middle of the summer, where the average temperature will get about 106 degrees, 110. You know what I'm saying? They're going to ship us all out there. You're going to have all these brain-dead, sagging individuals out there talking about their G's and all this old bullshit, okay? And they're going to throw us out there in the middle of the desert, and then they're going to turn off the water. Oh, yeah, with me being an old bastard, I'm foreseeing this. And believe me, this damn desert gets hot out here, people. But one thing, though, as a black man, I must say that I thank the ancestors for. I have never experienced sunburn before in my life. Okay?
Come on. I was in California at the time. I was in Ireland. And I had a buddy who was at 29 Palms. You know about that, Sarge, 29 Palms?
That's a training center out there on the coast.
Desert, actually, Sarge. I pass it all the time.
Mainly Marines use it more than anything, buddy.
I went out there to visit one of my buddies. And you talk about sunburn. My fucking ears was fucking burnt. If I didn't have a hat on, my nose would have been fucked up. My face was fucking like fine. It was horrible. So as much as I complain about the snow, I would take that over that sunbaking stuff. And I don't like to be out there in that kind of situation. I also used to live in Sacramento, where I used to go down to Stockton and go to Modesto. And when I seen
off of Highway 99, I know it well. Chef Rob.
I seen it get out there about 120. I was like, I didn't know this plane to get that hot. And I also been to Africa. I also been to Africa. So I had experienced that kind of thing, man. I was like, what the fuck?
Hey, I've been to Fort Irwin. You know where Fort Irwin is, don't you?
That's
right by Barstow.
That's the National Training Center. Our National Guard unit got sent there. Vietnam wasn't that hot, and it was dry heat.
Africa wasn't that goddamn hot. Shit.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, this desert is wicked out here, fellas. Now, let me explain something to you. Okay, I lived out here, man, you know, all my life. And do you know, gentlemen, I've never experienced no sunburn. Going through Barstow, going through Highway 99, man, up there, Kern County, man, Death Valley, what have you. You know what I'm saying? I've never experienced sunburn. Okay, so now I just learned something right here.
But when it comes down to it, ladies and gentlemen, as we're saying here in our closing, we're going to start our closing comments. That way that we could have a complete episode. And I'm going to go first. Okay, first of all, we thank everybody for calling in this morning. We definitely give special thanks to Dr. Truth Bay of the knowledge that she had dropped on. And then, of course, you know, she has a busy schedule in regard to Haiti. Sarge, we always thank you, Sarge, is because you bring color to the show. I have to give you that, Sarge. Today, Sarge, you did not, you know, take no stand in 8 counts. Also, too, Sarge, you was effective. I'm pumping my jab, you know what I'm saying? You rocked me a couple of times with your left hook over the right hand. Okay, you must have been studying Joe Frazier and Yank Durham quite a lot. Okay. Okay, and then also, too, you know, here at Chewbacca's Black Experience Enhanced, we get people who call us up and hate us and all this stuff right here. The only thing that we guarantee on this platform, to quote the words of Phil Donahue, we only guarantee provocative conversation. You know what I'm saying? Is because we have had hate mail in our chat room over the years. I myself have been insulted on my own platform. We don't mind pushing the eject button, okay, it's because as you have witnessed, Sarge, and you have witnessed a couple of times too, Chef Rob, is that we have no problem, man, showing people the door head first. You see what I mean? We don't like doing that. But however, one thing, okay, but one thing, though, that we will not have on this platform, we're not going to have no disrespect up here. You see what I'm saying? If we disagree, let us disagree agreeably. And then in the closing, Chef Rob, I just wanted to get a few comments from you, man, because we started off the show with the death of O.J. Simpson, sir. And we just want to get a few comments from you on that there, Chef Rob.
Okay, let me start by saying this. You know, thanks for having me. I had called in, but I'm still trying to take care of some other stuff. One of the things I'm trying to take care of is I've had a nonprofit for 12 years. And I've just been going ahead and using that to play little games here, but now I'm just 2,000% serious about it, and I'm looking for that donation of $300 or $400 from SARS, you know, International African American Foundation. So SARS, you're always talking that crap. So send some money.
I got an LLC as well.
Where do I go to look this up? By the way.
Yeah. Go ahead. We're in good standings. We're in good standings, so it's a problem. So let me get to the OJ thing.
Where is the information to be had again?
You can go ahead and look it, because I'm in Illinois. Okay, so we're in good standings with Illinois. It's the International African American Foundation non-for-profit. You can go ahead and check on the IRS website. So you can go ahead and check them out. So make sure I get that $3,000 from you as soon as possible. But my thing is,
and we would like to get 10% of that there, Chef Rob, for our platform of Chewbacca's Black Experience in hand.
Because we need help.
We're taking on a lot of water.
As far as me being a former government employee, I started seeing that money started rolling. So I'm gonna sit back and fart on my couch and smoke more weed now. But the
International African American Association, is that correct?
No, African American Foundation.
Oh, Foundation. Okay, I'll look it up. Yeah, and if I find it worthy, I might flip me a couple hundred dollars if I find it worthy.
And Sarge, Positive Action Commitment for Social Change, LLC, in Colorado.
Real quick, let me say,
I don't mean to step on nobody right now. Ladies and gentlemen, definitely check out www.blackseed.com, BLAQSI.com, Black Social Media Company. Also, too, check out our website to get your online degrees at Larry Love University, based out of Tulsa, Oklahoma. They need funding. You need funding, Chef Rob. Sarge needs funding. Brother Che needs funding. And Chewbacca's Black Experience Enhanced needs funding, too. So let's circulate the revenue amongst ourselves, gentlemen.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, we don't mind people coming out here on our platform, you know, mentioning, you know, what they're doing, which is great, which is beautiful. Just remember us. Now, the reason why we're having this attitude, because I don't know what Facebook is doing or what have you, but on the like page of Shabaka's Black Experience Enhanced, I'm seeing a lot of spam up there, and I'm letting it be known on the airways. People up here asking for donations and stuff like that. They're getting kicked off the page is because, you know, we need money over here, Shabaka's Black Experience Enhanced. So, but we do not mind working with others, but just please remember us, you know, because we're taking on a lot of water right here.
Yeah, yeah, you know, like, I'm trying to teach people about farming and agriculture, show you the opportunity from farming and agriculture, and including being a chef and running your own business. That's what we're doing. And I'm facing a lot of the farming stuff. I had aquaponics units, plus I got ties with farmers. But let me, real quick, because I know you guys want to go. And the OJ thing here, I'm going to make this real quick and simple. I don't care.
Right. Okay. All right. Now that's quick and simple.
Well, that's
right
simple.
There.
That's simple. That's
okay.
Simple. But look, I like to elaborate a little bit more on it. I do think it was an epochal moment in United States history because you got pre-O.J. Simpson, you got post-O.J. Simpson, kind of like pre-George Floyd and post-George Floyd. You got a change, sea change in cultural attitudes among a large segment of the population. And in that respect, it is hugely significant. And by the way, that it was the O.J. Simpson thing was the final nail in the coffin that made me become a conservative because I said to myself, man, we cannot abandon the search or the attempt to discover objective truth. And O.J. Simpson was all about subjective and racial truth, and we've been plagued by that shit ever since.
That's a word about the old for me.
Man, Los Angeles,
let me say this real fast. Fuck OJ. That's not going to stop these babies from out here hurting each other. That's going to stop these young women out here from having problems. That's not going to stop these young men from out here doing ridiculous nonsense. So I don't give a fuck about OJ. OJ, I didn't see OJ massively go ahead and donate money to certain causes or getting involved and stuff. I seen Jim Brown do stuff. Actually, I saw him when I was in L.A. But, you know, fuck OJ. I don't give a fuck.
Right. I concur.
Okay, Chef, you get no argument from me.
Well, maybe not him, but certainly what happened to the culture as a result of the controversy around him is of consequence.
No, it's not.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes, it is.
Okay.
There was a sea change in attitudes.
Oh, he did?
Okay.
Who passed?
OJ.
OJ Simpson. He died the day before yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
Prostate cancer, man. That's another thing.
Yeah.
If you're over 50 or over 40, really, you should definitely have that sucker checked regularly, at least twice a year.
So, Sarge,
and mine
like
is in great shape.
You like a motherfucker?
Mine is in great shape.
You like a motherfucker sticking his finger up your ass?
I don't necessarily like it, but I prefer it out to the cancer. That's for damn sure.
Wow.
And mine is in great shape. I thank you very much. I take my salt palmetto every day, and my shit is good.
Stick on my stomach, you know. Hey, what you sticking up my ass? Get the fuck out of here, man.
That was a tobacco.
On that day, ladies and gentlemen, we appreciate everybody who contributed today. We appreciate Brother Che. And here, ladies and gentlemen, at Shabaka's Black Experience Enhanced, there's never a dull moment. Okay,
that's right.
Dump, as in human shit. May the bad be convicted. Okay. Dude is sick. This toupee. Orange raccoon looking bastard belongs, to quote Al Pacino in Justice for All. He deserves to go right straight to fucking jail. And on
Man,
that note, ladies and gentlemen,
you
know, we out and we're going to do our closing here.
Later for the RBA and tomorrow Frontline Black News.
Yes, sir. Okay. And we're going out, ladies and gentlemen, with Cicely Tyson's husband, with Milestones,
the one and only Mr. Miles Davis.
Thank you all for the call.